This is The Triple Threat with Sean Pendergast and Rich Lord.
Gambling, sex, dope.
Be a part of the show at 713-572-4610.
Look like a belly-to-belly souffle in the wrestling terms.
This is Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Happy Bear Bryant Award Wednesday to all of you. Live from a place that, Rich, I don't think we're going to class this place up at all. Sometimes we go to places and I feel like, you know, we're going to class this place up a little bit. And that's not to denigrate those places.
No chance,
you know,
I love me
some grime. I said earlier I like Fremont Street as much as anybody. In New Orleans, I'm a big fan of the French Quarter, all of those things. We are at the Post Oak Hotel today, and this is a beautiful, beautiful venue, not only to do the show, but also a beautiful venue to host the Bear Bryant Awards tonight here. It's going to be great, and I think if you're a college football fan or a fan of good conversation, we've got a really, really good show lined up for you today. Good to be with all of you. My name is Sean Pendergast. To my right is Rich Lord. Hello, Rich.
Awesome to be here, Sean. How are you today?
I'm doing awesome. This is one of my favorite shows of the year to do. I'm a big college football fan.
Yeah.
If we did radio shows just in a vacuum and you didn't have to worry about, you know, things like, okay, are these topics that interest the most people possible, that kind
right.
of thing, I would talk a lot more college football during the fall because I love college football. And I'm perfectly happy talking about the NFL and our team
here in
town as well.
Absolutely.
But I personally really enjoy this show because it's an opportunity to get not only to talk college football, but to get to talk to the creme de la creme of the leaders in the 2018 season in college football.
And this event started in 1986, and I was there for that first one. My wife, Jenny, reminded me today that in the 80s, when I was just getting my radio career cranked up, we covered the first couple of these, and I was assigned to come here. And back in those days, the best part about being a young radio guy trying to make his way and being told you need to cover one of these, free dinner.
Oh, yeah. A free dinner.
She reminded me. I told her where I was going today, and she said, oh, yeah, I remember those meals when we couldn't afford good meals.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, yes, exactly, that event. And it's been an amazing few decades since 1986. Joe Paterno was the first winner of the award, by the way, in 1986. And this is the, 29th or 39th?
Well, 86 through 2019, so that's 34. This is the 34th edition of the award.
Yeah, you know my math.
Yeah.
It's been around a long time.
It has.
And, yes, selfishly, it's our opportunity to talk more college football than we normally do. And, of course, we're going to get a handful of the finalists, or at least are scheduled, to drop by and join us during the conversation here this afternoon. That's very cool, including our old friend Dabo Swinney.
But 4 o'clock, by the way. 4 o'clock for Dabo.
4 o'clock hour for Dabo Swinney. We should also mention that since that inaugural evening in 1986, this campaign, this event, which raises money for the American Heart Association, has been responsible for $9.2 million raised toward heart.
I knew you would have the number.
Toward
Thank
research
you.
Yeah. And the elimination of heart disease. It's the leading cause of death in America. It's a life-saving mission.
It is. And Bear Bryant died from heart disease. And I know that this has been a passion of his family, this award, and a passion of the American Heart Association. Somewhere along the way, my guess is we'll talk to Mark Tyson, who is Bear Bryant's grandson, who is always here at the award and certainly can articulate better than we can what this award means to the Bryant family and what all the money raised means to the Bryant family. But as you and I sit here, Rich, they're putting out all the different auction items and it's getting set up. This is basically a gala celebrating the best of the best in college football. Certainly, if you're coming out here to the event tonight, we will be easy to find. We're in the lobby of the hotel.
You can't miss us.
Yeah, I don't think you can register for the event nor get a drink unless you walk right by us. So,
yes. Come say hi.
Come say hello. Yeah, we appreciate that. Yeah, Joe Paterno in 1986, Rich, won the first one of these. Dick McPherson, 1987, Syracuse head coach.
Present.
Yeah. Lou Holtz, 1988.
I have great memories of great memories of that night because after the event was over and people were filtering out, sort of an after-hours kind of dynamic. Lou Holtz basically held court. I think the number of the people hanging around were Notre Dame alum or someone affiliated with Notre Dame, but there were also, slappies like me that just wanted to hear what Lou Holtz had to say, and it was fascinating.
Yeah, it's I've gotten to hear some of those talks before. I can only imagine what it was like after he took home the Bear Bryant Award. It had to be absolutely amazing. There are seven finalists for the award. However, two of them won't be here tonight, so I don't know what that does to the calculus behind the scenes. The votes have been cast typically, and we'll confirm this with John Harris, who's going to join us a little earlier today because of the mayhem that will be ensuing on the show today. I figured once 3 o'clock rolls around, actually 2:40 rolls around today, Frank Beamer is going to join us at 2:40, former Virginia Tech head coach. He's a Lifetime Achievement Award winner.
Yeah.
But once the first guest gets here, it really starts to become Grand Central Station. So I figured if we're going to get Johnny on, let's get him early. And he can help us preview and lay the, you know, kind of set the scene for the award tonight. But we'll ask Johnny because he's part of the group that puts the watch list together.
Right.
And he's involved in this award. I believe the voting takes place after the January 1st bowls have been played. So the bowls are included in the resumes of everybody, of all the coaches. The only data points missing, I would guess, would be the Alabama and Clemson data points on Monday's national championship.
So before, after everything except the national championship.
I think, unless
game.
The voting took place yesterday, because that game was only 2 days ago. So we'll confirm it with Johnny.
There is an internet these days.
There is. I guess all you need is a calculator and a phone.
Right. Well, and the other thing that's changed over the years, and unless they went back to the way it used to be, and I don't think they have, there there were a couple of times in the early days of this award where the winner could not make it,
and an
assistant coach or somebody representing the winner would show up and accept the award and make some comments on behalf of the winner. If I'm not mistaken, the committee that runs this event has eliminated that possibility.
You have to be here to get
it.
If
you can't be here, you can't win.
Yeah, which would mean that Nick Saban and Brian Kelly are off the list for tonight.
Exactly. Yesterday when we were talking about this, neither one of us took them to win the award.
No.
You went with the guy from UAB.
Bill Clark.
Yep. And I went with Dabo Swinney. And I'll feel a lot better about my pick of Dabo Swinney if I find out the voting took place after Monday night's game.
You know what's funny about that, though, Rich? Sewing up Monday night's game, does that make Dabo more great than he was before? You know, that's what's funny about it.
I think it gets him more support.
You're probably right. The way that he beat Alabama in that game.
Yes.
You know, to me, the most impressive thing about that game on Monday night, I was talking about this today with Kevin Eschenfelder. We were at the Chick-fil-A VIP. This is a huge humble brag by us right now. We got our black cards for Chick-fil-A today. And it was a who's who in media people in town there. And Esch and I were talking about the game. And we both kind of arrived at what was the most impressive thing about that game? Because there was a lot to be impressed about on Monday night. And I think the thing I was most impressed by on Monday was Clemson took over the football up 44-16 at their own 1 yard line. Remember, Alabama punts the football, they down it at the Clemson 1 yard line. They didn't give the football back. There were over 10 minutes left on the clock. Clemson held the football the rest of the game and didn't score. Like they just ground out first downs, ground the clock down to dust. And then just started taking knees. Basically, it was almost as if they were saying, Rich, like, you know what? You're lucky that this game didn't have a couple minutes left, because we probably would have just kept grinding first downs and not scoring just to taunt you.
Yeah.
Esch put it best. He goes, if that field were 150 yards long, they'd have gone on a 149-yard drive.
I think so, too. Should I be jaded and suggest that Alabama was a beaten team at that point?
No, I think that's the point. You know, I think that's – and there were backups in towards the end and things like that. Of course they were a beaten team, but that's – that's a product of what went on the first three quarters of that game.
And certainly the way the game played out is an irresistible talking point for us and anyone else that cares about college football, with the question being, has the torch been passed? Has there been a changing of the guard? And I know we're going to talk a little bit about that here this afternoon on the show. I'm not even sure where I am on that.
Well,
because I want to resist the temptation to say that the way that game played out was some sort of symbol of Alabama reaching the hilltop and now inevitably heading down the other side of that hill. I'm not yet convinced of that.
Yeah, I would be careful. I feel like we've done that to the Patriots a bunch of times, respond by winning or getting to a Super Bowl. I'm looking at a tweet here from Brett McMurphy after that game about Dabo Swinney, and he became only the 15th college coach with multiple wins against Nick Saban. Tommy Tuberville leads with 4. That stands to reason. Tuberville overlapped with Saban when he was at Auburn and when he was at Ole Miss. and he played him sometimes at LSU when Nick Saban was good, but not infallible like he's been for most of his time at Alabama. The coaches with three wins over Nick Saban: Lloyd Carr, Les Miles, Joe Paterno, Steve Spurrier, Joe Tiller. If you're wondering, Lloyd Carr, Joe Tiller, Joe Paterno, Saban spent some time at Michigan State, where
Michigan
he was
State Purdue games,
and Penn
Brees
State games, probably
beat Nick Saban.
Saban wasn't a world beater at Michigan State. He was good,
no,
but he was good enough to get the LSU job. But he was like a 9-3 type head coach. I don't know if he won a Rose Bowl or not at Michigan State.
Well, the most infamous thing I remember about that transition in his career. Not only was he not infallible at that point in his coaching career, but if I'm not mistaken, when he jumped from Michigan State to LSU and numerous assistants were given the opportunity to follow him to LSU, none did.
Yeah. Yeah.
None did. Louisiana. You want me to move to Louisiana?
Did you think they didn't follow him because of the geography or because they didn't like working for him?
I think the
probably maybe a combination of the two.
Maybe the story was that he was so, I don't know what's the right word.
Difficult?
That's better. Yeah. Better. Yeah. Difficult is maybe the tip of the iceberg. But yeah. Yes, that there was no, oh, I got to work for this guy among his staff.
Well, times have changed. If you work for Nick Saban, it's like you coached Baker Mayfield and Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
You get jobs like Cliff Kingsbury did yesterday, the Arizona job. If you've been on Nick Saban's staff.
Hey, Major Applewhite was on Nick Saban's staff.
Major Applewhite, you know, Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee. Lane Kiffin spent a couple of years, got back into the coaching gig.
Right.
The other thing I was thinking about with respect to Dabo, especially on a night like tonight where he's in line to win this award, an award that probably means the world to him because grew up in Alabama and was a walk-on on the Crimson Tide football team.
He's won two of the last three.
He won it in 15 and 16, and he's in line. I think he's probably the favorite tonight, Rich. You picked him. As you mentioned, I picked Bill Clark of UAB. People forget this about Dabo. You know, people think Dabo got to Clemson, and they just win. Dabo was an interim guy that got tabbed after they fired Tommy Bowden.
He was the wide receivers coach that nobody ever heard of.
Right, and he was this young rah-rah kind of guy, and he won some games early on, but people forget, in his third year, which nowadays is the referendum on coaches, if you're not good the third year, you get canned.
Right.
If not the second year nowadays. Dabo was 6-7 his third year at Clemson. His fourth year at Clemson, he went to the Orange Bowl, and Dana Holgorsen hung 70 on him in the Orange Bowl. I think it's safe to say that if Dabo Swinney's career at Clemson started in 2018 instead of 2008, or let's say 2015, so we have the sake of three years, he'd be fired by now.
He would have been fired after those four seasons. But that also speaks to Clemson's reduced expectations at that point in the arc of their football program.
I think it was a different time and place in college football, Rich.
It had been since Danny Ford in 82 when they'd been to the mountaintop.
No, that's fair. Like, what Dabo was doing maybe was better. And Tommy Bowden wasn't bad at Clemson. He just wasn't. Eventually you have enough years where you're going to the Citrus Bowl instead of instead of a big bowl game every year and they run out of patience. But I think it speaks to a different time and place that we live in now with respect to patience of college coaches.
Like, no doubt.
Three years, if you're not getting it done in a big conference, especially where they've got all that TV money now to buy you out if they want to.
And to that end, to bring home the point that you're making right now, and I know we're going to talk about this very soon, It's kind of fitting that we're sitting here at an event honoring the best college football coaches in the country because college and pro football coaches are riding a ridiculous carousel this
week. It's crazy.
I mean, we're barely keeping up right now. You need a scorecard right now, not only to keep up with the hires, but the interviews, the people leaving here to go there. It's absolutely amazing right now, and we'll definitely get you up to date on the latest.
We'll get you up to date. We'll talk to a couple of the coaches about that, too, because I'm curious what they think. Guys who have had NFL pedigrees, Jeff Tedford in particular, I'm curious what he thinks. You know, because he was at one time one of these hot young coaches that coached offense.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that with them. John Harris, we'll talk about it with him as well. He's our college football expert. Joins us a little earlier than usual. Usually on Wednesdays, 3:35 with Johnny. Today, 2:20, in about 5 minutes with John Harris. So we'll get his thoughts on Monday's title game. Has there been a passing of the torch in his mind? And we'll get his handicapping of the field tonight of the Bear Bryant Award. That's where we are. We're live at the Bear Bryant Award. Sean Pendergast, Rich Lord. We are the Triple Threat, live at the Devil's River Whiskey Broadcast Desk, Sports Radio 610.